Well, this summer, I did something that I've never done before. This summer, I spent money on something that in my lifetime I have never spent money on. You ready for it? I bought a TV. Wow, shock, horror. I bought a TV. Now, before you're feeling sorry for me and thinking, God, you've led a poor, neglected, deprived life, that's not because we haven't had a TV. It's just we've lived for years on hand-me-downs from family and friends. Our last TV, I think, was bought 15 years ago. It was Tesco own brand. We had it for the last 10 years, and I feel my claim to fame is I managed to sell it on Facebook Marketplace for £10 the other day. So that TV I made £1 a year on. Shrewd businessman me. It just so happened, happy coincidence, that buying this new TV just in time for Tour de France, Euro 2024, and what else have we had? The Olympics. Happy coincidence that that's happened. But I remember being in the shop. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, and you kind of all these TVs are on, and just how dazzlingly bright and brilliant the picture is. And walking around the shop, just coming to the realization just how rubbish my TV at home was compared to these things in the shop. So we very excitedly bought our first TV, got it home, got it unboxed, got it all set up. The grand unveiling. Emily and I sit down on the sofa, kids are still at school, put it on. It's great. And I'm thinking in my head, it doesn't seem much better than the old one. After a few minutes, I admit this verbally to Emily and say this out loud, and she kind of goes, yeah, I didn't want to say anything. So I'm kind of sitting there slightly disappointed. And then a few moments later, the realization dawned on us. If you're going to have a high definition TV, you've got to watch the high definition TV channel. Switch across. Suddenly, we're like thrown back in our seats and our mouths are wide open. Suddenly, everything is brilliant and bright. Watching exactly the same thing, but suddenly it's in high definition. And I wonder if that's a little picture for us of what was going on for the Christians in Colossae and why we have this letter open in front of us this morning called Colossians. They have got a great vision of Jesus. We heard last week Paul giving thanks, rejoicing for their faith in Jesus, for their love for all the saints, for their hope that was held for them in heaven. They were evidence, proof that the gospel was bearing fruit all around the world. And yet it seems that Paul's just aware that maybe the channel has changed back and the picture of Jesus that they've got has dimmed, dulled, and shrunk down. Because you see, with my TV at home, every now and again, the channel does get changed back, and I sit down, and it's 10 minutes before I've clocked because we don't notice at first. That's why Paul lays down what he hopes will happen with the Colossian Christians in verse 23. He says, if you continue in your faith, established and firm, and do not move from the hope held out in the gospel. Whatever was going on around the church in Colossae, what was being said around them, it was causing these Christians in Colossae to wobble off course, to wander off course, for their vision of Jesus to be dulled and dimmed. Maybe it seems that there were some around them and among them who were suggesting things like, well, Jesus is great. Jesus is brilliant. But do you know what? God's more than just Jesus. And you know what? You can know God, you can experience his blessings and all that he wants to give to you through different routes. Maybe Jesus has been shrunk down because they're hearing things like, well, if you really want to fly as a Christian, if you want to be a mature Christian, if you want to be a spirit-filled Christian, you've got to have this extra special knowledge. Or you've got to have this extra special experience. You've got to know this mystery. You've got to experience the mysterious. Or maybe it was just simply that, yeah, Jesus is great, but he was of his day. Jesus doesn't really know what life is like here for us in this place now. Suddenly, Colossae doesn't feel like a million miles away. These pressures continue for Christians. They continue for us today. How they express themselves will look very different, but these pressures are still here and they will keep going. You see, Christians like me, Right? You will wobble off course, will wander off course if our vision of Jesus shrinks down. If we're not seeing Jesus in high definition, if he becomes dull and dim rather than bright and brilliant. So in comes Paul with probably one of the greatest paragraphs about Jesus that has ever been written. People discuss, did Paul write it? Was it a hymn from the early church? Was it a kind of statement of faith that they used? Maybe Paul wrote it. Well, here it is for us this morning. Why does Paul give it to us? Well, because he wants to make sure we're tuned into the right channel, that we're seeing Jesus in high definition. We are seeing Jesus in all of his supremacy. And to help us keep on this channel, to keep tuned in to this high definition vision of Jesus, I want to zoom in just to the second half of verse 17, where we began our service this morning. We read, in him, in Jesus Christ, all things hold together. In him, all things hold together. I just want you to imagine in your mind's eye for a moment, a pair of human hands just being held out a bit like that. And I want you to look at them. And as you're looking at them, what are you seeing? What are they holding? And as you look a bit more closely, you notice that they're holding what looks like a globe. All things hold together in Jesus because Jesus is the cosmic creator of everything. The Jesus who got dusty, dirty feet walking around the Middle East, who drank water and drank wine, who ate bread and fish, somebody who people could listen to, could see, could touch, could smell. This is the claim. He is the creator of everything. That's how Paul begins in verse 15. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. And maybe we hear that sentence and suddenly go, that doesn't sound like a really big vision of Jesus after all. I mean, he's the image of? Does he just reflect God? He's not really God. He's the firstborn. Does that mean Jesus was created? He's not eternal. He's not divine. Well, I think when Paul says that Jesus is the image of God, it's not dulling or dimming our view of Jesus. It's to brighten it. Think about it this way. Jesus is the one who truly reveals God. He makes the invisible visible. He doesn't do it like a mirror and it's just a reflection. He doesn't do it like a photograph just representing what's there. He does it as revelation. Jesus is God himself making himself known to us. What that means is none of us here today have to guess what God is like. And what about Jesus being the firstborn? What does that mean? We hear of it. We hear that word and we think order of birth, don't we? I think of my big, big sister. She was the firstborn. Then my big sister. She's the secondborn. I'm the thirdborn. But it's less about order here and more about status. And maybe we reflect that in my family a little bit, this kind of status. And in my firstborn sister, she makes the rules. Secondborn breaks the rules. Third one, rules don't apply. But it's not about the rules with Jesus and relationship to the rules. It's about inheritance. Being the firstborn means you get everything. You inherit everything. This is Paul saying that absolutely everything there is belongs to Jesus. Why? Because he's the cosmic creator. Everything. Everything there is, from supernovas in space to the slugs that leave a trail on your doormat, all of it belongs to Jesus. Verse 16, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things. Isn't that amazing? Imagine those hands holding out the globe again. If we take a step back, suddenly that globe has turned into the entire universe. But then take a couple of steps forward and we go from the universe through the globe to what's that in the hands right now? It's you. And it's your life. Each of our lives is held together by Jesus. There is nobody above Jesus. There's nobody beyond Jesus. There is nothing outside of Jesus' control. And do you see where this leads us to? It means Jesus is of complete relevance to every person, in every place, in every point
of time.
The gospel is a message for every creature, verse 23, under heaven. In him, and only in Jesus, do all things hold together. Jesus holds everything together because he's the cosmic creator, and then we find ourselves thinking, so why is the world in such a mess? Why is so much wrong? Why does it feel like everything is broken? Why is Jesus holding something together rather than fixing what's broken? Well, I want you to imagine that pair of hands again and holding what looks like a globe. And I want you to really look in your mind's eye at that globe. What does it look like? What do you see? You see all these marks on it. It's a bit like it's been smashed into lots of sharp pieces. And these hands are not just underneath it, they're holding it all together. A bit like if you dropped a bowl on the ground and you picked up the pieces and you tried to hold it back together again. You can see where it's broken. There are shards and sharp bits. It's fractured and shattered. That is the reality for us in the world that God has created, that Jesus has created. Now, it's not because that's how Jesus created it. It's not because Jesus had an off day and dropped everything and went, oh no, and he's trying to hold it back together again. It's because of us and because of our human sin. You and me and the rest of humanity thinking that life is with me at the center and everything else going around. And so when we hear in him all things hold together, I want to suggest that's really good news for us. Because Jesus is not just ignoring the problem, trying to hold everything together. Whilst he's holding everything together, he's building his church. You see, Jesus is the cosmic creator and he's the reconciling recreator. Verse 18, he says, and Jesus, he is the head of the body, the church. Maybe you feel really disappointed. We've just been thinking about the universe and supernovas. And now we're thinking about the church. Oh, it's less impressive, isn't it? And just go back to the time of the Colossians. It wasn't over 2 billion people in the world following Jesus. You're probably talking tens of thousands. Seems like you go from the really impressive to the unimpressive, but yet the church is evidence that Jesus reconciles and is recreating. Our life together and the life of church down through history, around the world today, can give us a brilliant and bright vision of Jesus. I wonder if any of you have ever driven down to Folkestone to put your car on the Channel Tunnel. You've done that. If you haven't, I can't quite remember where it happens, but you kind of go through and get your tickets and you show your passports and you're driving through and suddenly there are these signs that say, welcome to France. You look around again. I've not been in the tunnel yet. How does that happen? I'm still physically in England. And yet at the same time, I'm in France. There's something of that in the church. We are still part of this fractured and fallen world. And yet through Jesus, we've been brought into his new creation, his new community, his kingdom. When Jesus returns and judges everything justly, all things, the whole created world will be made right. All things will be reconciled. How's that possible? Because in his humanity, Jesus had all the fullness of God dwell in him. So that his blood could be shed on a cross. Jesus gave up his life as a sacrifice to bring peace. We think back to the Old Testament sacrifices and the blood and the standing for a substitute, a death that happens in the place of another to bring freedom from judgment. Cosmic creator, the one who's been wronged so badly, he's the one who takes the initiative. He's the one who pays the cost. Jesus is our reconciling recreator. Go back to that picture again, those hands holding that globe. In him, all things hold together. Right now, Jesus is holding a fallen and fractured world together so that that work of reconciliation could be taking place person by person by person by person. And do you see how in verses 21 to 23, Paul suddenly gets personal? The high definition vision of Jesus is put right in front of the Colossians. That's put right in front of us this morning. Once, Paul writes, you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. But now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight without blemish and free from accusation. You've probably had the experience. I've had the experience. You look at yourself in a mirror and you see the marks, the blemishes, the kind of things you wish that weren't there. Just to imagine if you could do that, but instead of seeing your physical body, you could see your soul and all its marks and all its blemishes. All those things you've ever thought, said, and done. And then you look again and discover that the cosmic creator, this reconciling recreator, the one who is holding everything together, has removed every one of those marks, every one of those blemishes. They're gone. And nothing will stick. Anything that you could have had an accusation about is gone. Maybe you've never really had that kind of high definition vision of Jesus put in front of you. Is this the moment this morning that you need to come to Jesus and experience a revolution in your life? Because a follower of Jesus has been brought from thinking life is with them at the center and everything else going around. The revolution that happens is to discover that the sun is in the middle. Not the bright yellow thing in the sky that we're slightly missing at the moment, but the Son of God. Jesus at the center of things and our lives orbiting around him. Maybe today is the moment you need to make that commitment, that decision, to have that revolution happen in your life. But I suspect most of us need to hear what Paul desires from the Colossians. Continue in your faith, he says, established, firm, not moving from the hope held out from the gospel, not wobbling, not wandering. And maybe you're beginning to realize your vision of Jesus has dulled and dimmed, and you've not really noticed. So you haven't done anything about it. Or maybe you're here, and actually when you hear the sound, the name of Jesus, your eyes light up, your heart is lifted, it's like you're slightly energized, and you don't want to lose that. What do you do? Or can I leave you with a question? A question not just to think about, but a question to act upon. A question that you have complete permission, whenever you see me this week, to ask of me. You have complete permission to ask of each other, and I can ask of you. What are you doing to help have a crystal clear, high definition vision of Jesus this week? What are you doing to have a crystal clear, high definition vision of Jesus? Because let's remember those hands holding the world. Because Jesus, in him, all things hold together.